Good morning, everybody. Welcome. I think the first thing to do is call the meeting to order and go through some introductions, and I can start, and we can go to my right around the room and then do online. So I'm Lauren Bierman, a member of Romac.
I'm Mike Jamison, member of Romac, live up at the end of East Fork of Dairy Creek. And can we get other participants online?
Yes, I'm assuming.
No. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
Because we're doing introductions, that's important.
All right, we've got them on our screens here. We can keep on rolling.
Slade Leahy, member of Romac.
Mark Farah, member of Romac.
Sherry McFaul, Washington County staff.
Todd Watkins, Washington County.
Dan Morgan, Romac.
Brian Irish, Washington County staff.
Keith Lewis, Washington County.
Brian Irish.
Brian Irish, Washington County staff.
LaBeth.
Can you hear us now, LaBeth? Looks like you're connected to audio.
In the interest of moving forward in time, if Sherry doesn't mind, we'll go ahead and continue. We have got the February 2023 meetings. Anybody have a chance to go through those, read them, and see if we need to make corrections?
This is Dan Morgan. One correction. We should add Courtney to the list of attendees, given that she also presented.
Thank you, Dan. Good observation. I'll do that.
Motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right, we're going to move on forward to guest comments. Do we have any guests today? So that's an easy one to check off. And we are going to go right into a report on transportation planning in the rural areas by Steve Kelly, if you don't mind.
Good morning. Can you hear me? Right on. Thank you. Yeah, I'm Steve Kelly, senior transportation planner with the department. And one of my roles with the department is to focus on the long-range transportation system plan for Washington County, both the rural and area. So thank you for having me this morning. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'll have plenty of time at the end for questions, but if you see something that is a burning question, please let me know. Let's go ahead and get to the next slide, please. So this morning, I'm going to talk about what is in our transportation system plan as it is today, I may use the term TSP by accident. That's the acronym for our transportation system plan. So if I do use that acronym, I apologize, but please be aware I might say that. Today, I'm going to focus on the transportation system plan in the rural area. I'm sure all of you use the urban roads as well, but I'm focused this today on our rural area.
Excuse me, Chris. Oh, we got it. We didn't have a presentation.
Oh, okay. There we go. Great. Great. If there's technical issues, yeah, stop me. Thank you. Let's see. We also do coordinate with all the cities in Washington County, as well as ODOT, Metro, and TriMet, and 12th and Hills Parks and Recreation, and others. And each of those has their own plans. But our plan is includes the unincorporated area of the urban area, as well as the rural area, and the county roads that traverse the cities and throughout the county. The transportation system plan is both a policy document, and it identifies the transportation system that's envisioned to serve our community. An important aspect of our transportation plan is to describe and enable ongoing policies and procedures, what we're doing and what we're supposed to be doing. So next slide, please. In rural Oregon, we have statewide planning rules that limit the providing of infrastructure to serve our urban communities. So major infrastructure investments, roadways, new roadways, road widenings, et cetera, are limited. Generally, in the rural area, the transportation plan is about safety, operations and maintenance, and managing the system. Improvements that you do see in the rural area, such as a roundabout or other projects that are out there, tend to be mostly safety related. Next slide, please. So our transportation system plan identifies envisions a network of complete streets that serves our community. In the rural area, it does have pedestrian and bicycle attributes, but those are more limited. Generally, it means a wider shoulder rather than a dedicated bike lane or sidewalk or some other separated type of facility. Next slide, please. So our transportation plan has 11 goals that are listed here on this slide, and there's the three main categories of guiding principles, system design, and implementation. And those are the goals, and each of those has objectives and strategies which focus on enabling and implementing those goals. You can see our old logo. I think it's been replaced there, but it's still adopted in our transportation system plan from about 10 years ago. And our guiding principles were based at the time on our old logo as well. So it is a coordinated department-wide plan and policy document. I'm going to talk briefly about the objectives and strategies in the rural area, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. If you have more questions, feel free to contact me afterwards or ask during the presentation today. So next slide, please. Way too much text, but I wanted to make sure that you were aware we do have a vitality goal that emphasizes and recognizes the importance of the rural economy to Washington County, and it includes strategies that we consider. Next slide, please. And likewise, we do have a rural livability goal that recognizes our existing rural communities and rural areas and the impacts that through traffic may have on those communities. Next slide, please. And we also have several strategies in other goal categories related to our natural environment, Our active transportation, a pedestrian and bicycle system, is called active travel modes. And we do have a coordination strategy that directs staff to continue to coordinate with ROMAC. So that's one of the reasons that we're here today. And ROMAC serves as an important body for communication with our rural communities that are out there. Next slide, please. Moving on to the designations in the transportation plan, these are generally mapped. If you have specific questions about a specific roadway and its designations on the plan, I can talk about that. But today I'm just going to give an overview of what these designations are. The functional classification is probably our most important designation. And what it does is describe how the traveling public utilizes our roadway system. In the rural area, we focus on arterials and collectors. We do not have the neighborhood routes or local streets identified. The transportation plan does not identify local streets, but it does, in the urban area, have a network of neighborhood routes that connect neighborhoods together. And those are not in the rural area. Yes, question, please.
Yeah, my question is this. It's not just you, but we get countywide functional classification map, for example, that doesn't include a significant part of the northern or western part of the county. And I find that a bit problematic when we're talking about a countywide function.
I'm sorry, it does include, the map does include online. I kind of cropped, it's my fault. I cropped it to sort of give a better focus on the system, the main part of the county, try to get the county on one page. And I cropped it a little bit for this graphic and probably shouldn't have. I realized that just now. So I apologize for that. If the map does cut off your area, we can certainly provide what that map looks like. It's always hard with a big map to show the whole system countywide. So yes, it does include that, and the cropping is completely unintentional.
Well, just to explain to you, it's nothing to do with you. It started when there were informational materials set out to county residents to do with a tax thing that was on the ballot, and they sent it to people in a rural area that weren't even on the map, and I thought that was a pretty big mistake, and so I've sort of followed that over time.
We do that from time to time, and other staff have been guilty of it as well. I remember being at a presentation where somebody was talking about Cornelius and Forest Grove, and they were cut off the map. So that does happen. But our functional classification system is the sort of the most important thing that people look at when talking about our roadways. It's kind of the starting point. Let's move on to the next slide, please, if there's no more questions. So freight, we do have a roadway freight system. I'm sorry, all the maps are going to cut off up north there. So it's just a decision of the map maker at the time. The roadway freight system includes both truck routes and then a over-dimensional truck route designation. Truck routes tend to be state highways and other major roadways, but also places where you see lots of trucks. Next slide, please. In the rural area, we have a special designation called Rural Road Enhancement Study Corridors. And these corridors identify where we know there are conflicting travel needs between different users of our systems out there. And they focus on considerations for enhanced safety. We know there's problems out there. We should continue to monitor those and look for safety improvement opportunities as they're available. So next slide, please, shows the map of those and cuts off the north again. but many of these rural roadways were originally designed and built and intended to accommodate local traffic and support agricultural related traffic. And now these corridors host urban traffic, as well as farm equipment, commercial traffic, freight traffic. And it's important that we, you know, monitor these corridors and consider how to operate them safely over time. So this designation identifies those and suggests that staff look for safety measures on these roadways. Basically, look where we know we have problems and considerations first. Next slide, please. We do have a pedestrian system that covers the rural area. It designates rural pedestrian activity areas where we know there are pedestrians out there. And when we're doing anything that affects or changes the right-of-way, we should consider those if they're in one of those areas. And then the transportation plan also identifies several regional trails in the rural area, as well as has several regional trail refinement areas in the rural area where we have identified a need for a future regional trail, but we have yet to determine the exact alignment. Next slide, please. Cycling is an important activity in the rural area. So back on the functional classification map, all arterials and collectors are designated as bikeways. And that means that those are intended to, as possible, have enhanced shoulders to provide for bicycle travel in the rural area. The bicycle system relies on those other designations in the rural area, but also includes the Tualatin Valley Scenic Bikeway, where we know that there is a 30-mile bicycle route connecting Hillsboro with the Banks Fernonia Trail through Forest Grove. Next slide, please. We do also have a maintenance strategy, a maintenance goal with several strategies. These strategies identify working with ROMAC to evaluate our maintenance program. So that's one of the main purposes of the committee, and the transportation plan recognizes that and sets up the policies for staff to follow there. Next slide, please. And I always take a minute to talk about the transportation, how we get from an idea or a concept to a facility on the ground. So this describes how the transportation planning process works in Washington County and frankly throughout Oregon. Sometimes people get confused about the process and what the transportation plan does. Some people think, well, it's just a plan. Don't worry about that. That's not something that is going to happen until there's something to implement it. And they're not wrong, but it does have more effect than that. And then other folks get really concerned whenever there's a plan change, thinking it's going to be an imminent change immediately. And that can occur, but the transportation system plan is generally between those two extremes. It serves as an enabling document that allows for projects to proceed once they're ready. So sometimes that's a very long time in the future, where what we're describing is really the overall network assumptions for other areas. And in other cases, it's related. We know we have a project that could be advancing. So the time period between transportation system planning and identifying or prioritizing funding is something we try to be as honest about as possible whenever we proceed with any kind of change to the plan, as far as we're aware. But the transportation plan really serves as the first official formal step when we're moving from an idea to something that could be implemented on the ground. Next slide, please. I think that was my last one, actually. Yeah, so I just wanted to open it up for questions and discussions, and I can certainly come back or answer questions by email or whatever questions pop into your minds today. I know with me, sometimes I walk away from a presentation like this and think, gee, I should have asked. And so if you have those questions that come up, you know, please let staff know, and I'm available. So with that, thank you.
So Steve, this is Dan Morgan. I have a question.
Go ahead.
yes. On your last slide, you go from inception to completion, but is there a phase where you actually look at the results. You're talking about safety in the corridors. Adding a safe fixture or changing the route to make it more safe. Is there, do you collect data to show that you actually did increase safety?
Yeah, that's a, you know, a project by project sort of consideration. We do look at safety data as we evaluate either any change to the plan or update to the plan and consider, what improvements might be needed out there. But typically the plan identifies the need, the function, the general location and mode of a facility. It doesn't get into the design level details of, hey, how do we do this safely? It might, so a safety assessment at the planning level would identify, hey, there's a bunch of incidents occurring out here. We should be aware of that and, you know, flag something as a potential improvement location, but it wouldn't get into the design or funding for a project. Did I answer your question?
Kind of. Yeah, I just was wondering if there was follow-up. Let's say that there's four trucks that go into a ditch on a certain curve and you change the highway. Does anybody go back to see if the number is now two?
Yeah, we would continue to monitor and see if it was a change would be needed. So once something does get implemented like that, it's on the ground and it's probably going to be there for quite a while. If we do find that there's still a problem in a location, then yeah, we would go back and say, hey, we still have a problem here. What can we do?
Okay, thank you.
Steve, Gary Virgin here. Could you share with us some of the assumptions that you make, say, for our transportation 30 years from now? I'm not talking about tomorrow. I'm talking about 30 years out, because that's what you'd call long-range planning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The transportation plan has a planning horizon of at least 20 years, and we have a number of tools we use. We have a travel demand model that estimates both existing travel on our roadway system and transit system as well, but on our roadway system, and then those future volumes are forecast as well. So we can take a look and see how the forecast compares to what's on the ground today and how it changes to the future, and then tune that based on what we are observing out there as well. So that's something I've spent a lot of my career working on, is those travel demand type forecasts. And they are key for, particularly as we get into project selection and project design, assessing, hey, what are the benefits of this project going to be in the future, as opposed to just addressing situations we have today.
The real question is, what are the assumptions that are used driving the model?
And I'd like to interject here just real quick, if you don't mind. There is a Transportation Future Study Advisory Committee that met. I think the two members that are involved with the ROMAC is Commissioner Wiley and I were the two members on that. There's a whole bunch of data there, and I don't know if you utilize that, but if it helps, Gary, maybe that would be something that we could enter into a future meeting to start covering, which will be a conversation I'd like to have when we're done asking these questions.
Yeah, I was actually involved in some of the background work behind the scenes with that study. I didn't participate in the sort of the results of the study, but some of the data development behind the scenes. I was a reviewer and reviewed the futures study as well, as it had the different scenarios and land use assumptions that were out there. Our regional government, Metro, has a land development forecast for the urban area. And in the rural area, we generally assume it remains relatively the same. There's not a lot of development that is anticipated in rural areas, and we're required in the urban area to utilize the regional forecast. So we take a look at that and consider how it applies to Washington County roads and sometimes improve on the calibration based on our techniques and traffic counts that we have out here, and then use that as our tool to assess what future traffic conditions might look like. And one can change those assumptions, and we've done a number of scenarios, over hundreds of scenarios over time, where we said, well, what if we change the future assumption here, either on the roadway side or on the growth assumptions side. So we do that type of forecasting and see its effect on the rural system. We've done the also did the urban reserves transportation study, where we looked at what would happen if the current urban reserves were fully built out, and compared that with the regional forecast. There's another question over here. Go ahead, please.
No, this is a perfect lead into to my question. When the state legislature is now considering, under this CHIPS Act money thing, of taking land that's currently in rural reserves, so you haven't planned for it, and talking about making 500 chip factory sites, how much is the county consulted on those decisions? Do you have input? Because it's obviously going to impact the adjacent roads as well as the areas they're designating. So
I don't know how much the county's consulted. I have not been involved in that process, so I don't know much about it. I've heard rumors of something. That's about it. You probably know a lot more about it than I do.
Steve, I want to try to understand better for myself where I guess your role fits. And the way that I'm asking it is it your role to react to what's happening and document it, or is it to advocate for what the county wants to happen? So, you know, you talked about the city and ERTS, and maybe this future study is really where the answer is, but I'm just trying to understand, are you documenting what's happening and saying, hey, we all need to be ready for this because Tiger's doing this, Cornelius is doing this, there's CHIPS Act, we need to be ready for it, or is it part of your role to say, hey, we want 47 to become X, we want Mountain Home Road to be this, so let's put it in the plan and make that happen?
A bunch of both. One is document what is happening and make sure that we're able to respond to those changes over time. And then the second part of it is to identify what our vision is for various roads, what they're going to look like in the future, and what we anticipate the way people will behave in the future. So serve not only the existing community, but the growing and changing community as well. So yes, it's kind of stuck between both of those.
It sounds like, if I can, that predominantly what you're doing is you're reacting to what's happening out there, documenting it, and putting in the plan what we think we need to do to react to what's happening. It's not as though you want this to happen in this neighborhood, so you're going to put it in the plan to make it happen.
I characterize the rural area especially as much more reactive.
Yeah.
We don't have new infrastructure facilities,
right,
that we can locate.
Right.
So there's not a lot we can do to change,
yeah,
the system. Whereas in the urban area, there's a lot more able to adjust the plan based on what's happening,
yeah,
and our visions for that community. So as communities are developing, we, you know, develop a plan to serve the transportation needs of those future residents and identify problem areas that may arise and actually do more of the visioning there. And unfortunately, in the rural area, there's not a lot we can do other than react to what is occurring on our road, on our system.
Thank you.
Hey, can I interject something real quick? It's just an observation. I'm not a planner, but I play one on TV. One thing that I noticed too, and maybe Steve can talk to this, is that the urban area tends to influence the rural area more than the rural area influences the urban area. You get bedroom communities like Forest Grove and Cornelius, where people live and commute back into the more urbanized area where the central industry is and the jobs and centers and that sort of thing. And so now you have these urban centers that are now, which are, you know, the urban side of things, but they're using rural roads. And so now you have the rural infrastructure, which may be not set up to handle those types of traffic flows and the volumes and the needs. So I think that's something that, you know, it's a byproduct of development in the urban area where there is that control as far as the planning goes. And then the rural area, we have to react. And I think to Gary's point, and I'll bring up Tile Flat, right? That's a very good example where you have the development happening on Cooper Mountain, the south side of Cooper Mountain, and yet people have to get to Hillsborough. And how do they get there, right? They go up and over Clark Hill and Tile Flat and that sort of thing. So, and then we have to come in kind of behind, and it's like we're always one step behind. We've done other projects like at our level, like in the ops group. We've done shoulder widenings. We make sure that those roads, you know, are, we pay attention to their road condition, knowing that the volumes are going to be, you know, higher and that sort of thing. But as far as other major things, that's kind of the extent of what we do. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. It's just an observation I have.
I'd like to point out that the very area that Todd's talking about right at the moment is experiencing about 1,000 dump trucks a day in front of my house. There is no shoulder, deep ditches on each side, bicycle traffic coming up this collector, I think it is, maybe. And so all I'm trying to point out is 30 years ago, I lived at that house, had for 20 years, so I knew what was happening, and I know what's happening now. And those are very certainly in different worlds. And that's why I asked, what is the 30-year horizon, the assumptions made? For example, is the CHIPS industrial development still headed north of the city of Hillsborough? Or maybe it would be better out by Forest Grove somewhere, north of Forest Grove. You know, what is the planning that's going on to help organize that? I also point out that Tile Flat Road that Dodd mentioned has a section of about a mile that is far too narrow for truck traffic. And yet, it's in a quote unquote rural area where that a couple of very, very dangerous and difficult turns are not being treated or being considered. And that bothers the heck out of me because I know that there's 1,000 homes going in just south of that point. How are those people going to get there?
Yeah, we've worked extensively. So north of Hillsborough here coming in on Jackson School Road this morning for me was mentioned. And that area is Hillsborough's urban growth expansion area. They've been working on plans there for what they call Jackson East. And that area has a concept plan the city's adopted, and we worked extensively with them on the plan, the vision for that area. The changes haven't really started yet, and there will need to be some road improvements that the city will be implementing as part of that. Then down where you guys were talking about around Cooper Mountain or South Cooper Mountain and Beaverton's urban growth expansion area there, as well as Tigard's River Terrace, and now they have another one that's just recently inside the urban growth boundary called River Terrace 2. We've worked extensively with both Beaverton and Tigard on the transportation system for that area. Unfortunately, in a number of cases, as those communities develop, there's conditions on the urban development for them to build the internal roads as well as some of their frontage roads and other roads, and then pay into accounts for road improvements. And typically, once those areas start paying into those accounts, they need to generate enough development, usually at the time of the building permit, is when the charge occurs. And it takes a while to build up enough resources for the public to go out and implement those road improvements. So the road improvements tend to follow once there's available revenue. And typically that means the community's been in place for a while and developing, and then finally the public project can come back and implement the improvements that everybody's been saying we needed for quite a while after it comes in. That's what we're experiencing up in North Bethany when unincorporated county took on a similar type of concept plan. And we're just now getting to some of the improvements on Springville Road up there that people have been calling for since development started up there. And most of that community's already, you know, in or approved or in process in some way. And that may be the case. I don't know the timing of the projects. We do have a vision of the roadways necessary to serve the development, but the timing between when it goes in and when the project gets put on the ground does vary and sometimes can be a lengthy delay.
You know, in the interest of time here, we're already a little bit over, and I've got about 3 to 4 minutes of things that I need to cover with Steve, with you guys about the future, number one. But number two, there's something really important I want to do, and that's ask LaBeth if, I know she's having technical difficulties, but I want to make sure she has a voice. If there's anything she'd like to ask, questions or comments, if she'd put it in that chat box in the next minute or so, or if she can speak. So we are good to move forward. You know, Steve, you and I had met at a meeting at a town where the city had brought a developer and their engineering firm in, and we're discussing some road improvements. And I think you and I had a discussion during that meeting about the aversion of the county or the state condemning properties to build infrastructures and whatnot. You know, they've continued those meetings. They had a second meeting that was bigger. They brought a law firm in, you know, the home builder did, with their engineering firm. And one of the things that stuck in my mind was I had heard about more road improvements going on, you know, with this Highway 6 Arts Road roundabout. We talked about all of a sudden now there was this fact that was presented at this meeting that there was going to be a realignment of Wilkesboro Road. And not to go down the individual road thing, but today we have the potential of cutting a budget item by 65%. I don't want to hear from private engineering firms what the plan is. And so knowing that our rural objectives and strategies line up, you know, with the mission of ROMAC and you together perfectly aligned, I would like to see this happen more often. I would like Steve to come here and tell us what's going on, not just maybe the overall big picture of the drone at 45,000 feet. Maybe we want to get in the weeds a little bit just to know where we're going. We have questions about chipset and all this other stuff coming. Maybe bringing in some of the future study advisory stuff to look at. I know there was a plan to go north. Mark and I were both just involved in a Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce meeting with ODOT where it was referenced quite heavily, I think. And so that's my idea. What do you guys think online and here about making this a more permanent relationship with planning and having them here maybe and discussing things and looking at the futures?
If I may interject, we can certainly bring information to you, but I do want to remind you that there is a planning commission that deals directly with much of what Steve is talking about. So we can certainly report on things to you, but there's not a lot of decision making that can happen in this body regarding future.
Yeah, and I don't mean to insinuate that we want to make a decision. I think to make the decisions that we are going to make in operations and maintenance as an advisory committee to the county board, it's important to know what that planning commission is doing. What is going on in this world that we don't see? A lot of the questions they're asking today is what's going to happen in 30 years. I don't think any of us can really probably answer that 100%. But at least to have a presentation of the concept of where we might be going would be good. I mean, it's up to the body what they think, but.
And Steve and I have already discussed that he'll be back every year with a presentation.
I also will point out that the Planning Commission is reflective of what is presented to it. Mm-hmm. They're not deciding based on facts outside of what lay in front of them. And I think that what we'd like to explore, or I'd like to explore, are facts that lay outside of what goes in front of the Planning Commission. In other words, what if, how can we help with the direction long-term of the rural situation?
Yeah, I'd agree. Maybe it's not every 6 months, but maybe it's not a year, maybe it's some interval in between, because I'm aware of, as you just mentioned, Tiger River Terrace 2.0 just got approved a month ago. And King City is gonna complete their master plan here in the next 6 months. Metro will adopt a new RTP program in the next year. They're doing a new UGR report throughout this year. So there's things that are happening in other jurisdictions that you are going to have to, I'm not making it personal, that the county needs to react to say, hey, this CHIPS thing is happening. And now we know that Governor Kotek is gonna have executive authority to adopt and lay claim to five, not lay claim, but to identify 500 acres here. Here's how the county, we think we need to react. So Sherry, I think it's more about keep allowing ROMAC to have updates about the new information that we've learned through all the other cities that are doing and agencies that are doing things, and have Steve tell us. So what we think the implications of that King City action in River Terrace is, we need to upgrade River Tile Flat Road. And we see that Tile Flat Road is gonna move from a 20-year improvement schedule to a 10-year improvement schedule. And those types of subtleties of what other agencies are doing and what it means to the rural roads is just advising us so that we have a better understanding of what the county is planning to do. I don't think you're asking for decision making about whether or not we think that should be in the plan or this in the plan, but just a lot, giving us the information so we can be better informed about what's going on in the rural areas. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and I want to hear it from county staff. I don't want to hear it from a private engineering firm. And then when I push them and the law firm that's presenting this as fact, and they name off 7 county employees, I want to hear it from the county. I want to hear it from staff. I don't want to have to attend meetings that I'm, and I'm no longer attending those meetings, so I'm not comfortable with the, you know, the way they were set up. And I'm a property owner, but I'm also on city planning in that town. So I've decided not to continue with those meetings, just because I personally am not comfortable with it. It's not an ethics issue. It's just, I'm not comfortable with that. And so now I don't have that information coming to me. So I want to look to you guys to get me that information. I don't think private engineering firms and law firms need to know, you know, before a group of guys that are advising, you know, anybody know anything about what's going on rural roads. That's just my opinion. You know, I think Mark knows how to say it a whole lot better than I do.
I would chime in. I think this is probably the most active time for different transportation planning attributes that affect Western Washington County, including both urban and rural areas, that I've seen in my history with the county since 2000. We have a lot going on the western edge, and then we also have a new regional plan under development. And the state has provided new transportation planning rules. I talked about how their effect on the rural area. They didn't change the rules for the rural area, but they did for the urban area substantially. And so we're still trying to figure out what they mean. The rules are confusing, to say the say it nicely. And they may have substantial effects throughout the urban and rural areas. I don't really fully understand what they'll mean for our roadway system. I know they'll have large impacts on land use and development applications throughout the urban area over time. So there's a lot going on that it's impossible to keep track of everything, honestly. So there's a lot of our staff that are working on different aspects of what you're talking about. So it may be appropriate for myself to come back or other county staff to join me and have these kinds of discussions. And I, when we were developing our transportation plan about 10 years ago, we had a number of meetings with ROMAC and discussed the attributes of the roadway system. And then frankly, we got really busy and wanted to come back to ROMAC more frequently and still do. We see the importance of the communications with the rural community and the effect of urban growth and urban traffic on our rural community. And we don't want to discount that. It's just we got busy with a lot of other stuff and now we're even busier. So we need to prioritize making sure we come back and keep you informed. And I think that's something we're trying to deal with as a staff in long range planning of how do we prioritize these sorts of engagement meetings with yourself and other bodies as well.
Well, thanks for coming. I think it's obvious by the reaction that there is, you know, an outreach to you guys to let's keep this conversation going. So, and we are 10 minutes over, guys, so we're going to jump into the next thing. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Gary, did you have something?
I just wanted to say thank you for taking on this discussion. It's long overdue.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, so the next thing we're going to hit is going to be the subcommittee meetings and what they've come up with. To make it official prior to discussion, though, we need to approve, and this is subcommittee members, the meeting minutes from our February 23 meeting.
Motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I second
interrupt?
That.
Let me interrupt for just a moment. Brian brought to my attention that there is an error on the minutes. 1, 2, 3. The third paragraph is repeated twice. So I'll be making that change in the final approval. So now go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So we have a motion and a second to approve the meeting minutes as edited by Sherry. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Same sign. All right. So the subcommittee report, Brian's going to be here to present, and Brian, I'd ask you, is this going to be the same information that was presented to us in the subcommittee meeting in the same format with the Excel spreadsheet?
I had considered using less graphical aids, Lauren, but effectively, yes.
Okay. So, you know, the first thing to discuss, I guess, is we had a unanimous decision, if you've read the meeting minutes, to move forward with this reduction in the way that Brian, Aaron, and Ed, I believe it is, put together.
And Nick Stroberger, the project manager for the contract.
That information that we're going to present is based on more of a big picture. If we start presenting it road by road and we sit here and we discuss it road by road, and this was discussed during the subcommittee meeting, we could get into the weeds. We could be here for days with this many members to discuss it. I think all of the subcommittee members looking at it, you know, we've all gone through a personal exercise or two looking at the data to make sure that, you know, it all looked good, and it does. I think we all three of us can say that we have roads on the list that you might see that we don't necessarily agree with, but the way the data was driven to decide whether or not the road stayed in or out of the treatment area was done in the proper manner and in what we believe is the right way. So knowing that, I'm gonna go ahead and let Brian roll through it, because I think having the expert tell us what's going on and explaining his data is probably the best way, and then we can continue that discussion as we go down.
Thanks, Lauren. Backing up a little bit before the discussion about surface stabilization in particular, which is what Lauren is referring to, our first subcommittee meeting, I presented some draft information for the upcoming fiscal year about the roads that we plan to perform surface treatments on, both in-house and contracted. I explained our updated and, in my opinion, improved methodology for determining roads in the rural area that need ditch maintenance. And I also shared with them our improved vegetation program specific to brush cutting, in which we are planning on doing a much more condition-based programmatic brush cutting in the rural area. But the real bulk of the discussion of the subcommittee turned into the surface stabilization program, and I asked for their help in conjunction with help from staff, the folks that Lauren mentioned, including the project manager, our surface supervisor, and our principal engineer. As you may or may not have seen from the subcommittee meeting minutes, we are facing a budget shortage and we are facing increased costs. So how is that going to trickle down to the road maintenance program? We are still going to perform mandated activities. That includes vegetation trimming, that includes striping roads and putting buttons down, but other areas are going to have to suffer. And that includes the surface treatment candidates that I shared with the subcommittee and surface stabilization. A brief primer on surface stabilization. This is the application of lignin sulfonate to gravel roads on areas that have received traditionally increased amounts of distress. And that includes shady areas, corners, and hills. So before I get into what we proposed and what the subcommittee approved, I just want to touch on a little history of surface stabilization as programmatically applied by Washington County. As recently as 2017, we were putting down just under 4 miles of surface stabilization on the gravel road network. In 2018, we were fortunately able to expand the program to 14.4 miles of surface stabilization. And then fast forward to last fiscal year, we were at 38.19 miles of surface stabilization going down on our gravel road network. So with the budget picture coming into focus a little more clearly as the weeks and months have gone by leading up to today, we need to reduce that program, the surface stabilization program, by more than half. So I took that list of last year's program and gave it to a technician that developed the program in the first place. His name is Sam Zake. And I asked him to review all the roads and make suggested cuts in order to fit within those parameters and the budget situation that we are up against. He did that. He suggested several segments to be removed and some mileposts that could be adjusted to reflect a better representation of where that product should go down. And we were able to arrive at or around about 15 miles, down from that 38.19. In addition to that, we have greater reporting capability within our gravel road rating software application. And I asked one of my technicians to review the proposed list of reductions and compare them to the ratings that we just obtained in November. And the result of that analysis was, by and large, the roads that are receiving surface stabilization are in good shape. They are in acceptable condition. And just a primer on how we rate roads, the segments are scored on a condition rating from 1 through 5. 5 is perfect, 1 is barely passable. So that analysis showed that the roads on the proposed lists were mostly in good shape. There are a few segments that are at a condition rating of 3 that are receiving surface stabilization. But I shared that with the subcommittee, and the net result of that is, in my opinion and in the subcommittee's opinion as well, the areas that we have targeted for surface stabilization traditionally are benefiting from it. And that is reflected in the list that the subcommittee looked at and the project manager and our principal engineer and surface supervisor agreed upon. So does that about cover, is that your recollection of the discussion, Lauren? And is that enough information for the ROMAC committee?
Yeah, I believe it is. What do you think, Slade and Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
So I think going forward, you know, the plan is to reduce the budget on the surface stabilization by, I think it's like 66.5%. You know, the targeted areas that Brian and his group are targeting are very specific. And they do have issues that need to be dealt with. They are improving because of the surface stabilization program. It sucks, to put it bluntly, to reduce a budget. You know, nobody wants to do this. I think it's time that, you know, maybe this subcommittee continues, and every year in good or bad, you know, be involved in the discussion and put our stamp on it somewhere as they send it up the flagpole. And so the motion was in the subcommittee to approve the program as presented to us with the cuts where they were, which puts us right, if I remember right, and Brian can correct me, it's putting us within a couple of bucks of budget.
500, yep.
Not too bad. You know, our original idea was to go after this thing and just drop everything that wasn't a rural collector. And that was something I think I brought up, and it was a short-sighted way of doing it. But when it put the dollars and cents of $1 per linear foot into, you know, into that equation, it was a way to do it quick and ugly. You know, Brian's group didn't do it quick and ugly. You know, they went through it. It might be ugly, but it wasn't quick. you know, we discussed future treatments, you know, the possibility of doing the vibratories mounted on the back of the wheel packers to give them a little bit more efficacy. You know, Ed Musen, who's, I believe, the project manager on surface stabilization, had thought that wouldn't buy us a lot. You know, we talked in our subcommittee about concrete treated bases again, and you know how hard that would be to manage, and that costs money. And so do we continue to reduce this budget to try treating one small area, or do we just put that all on hold? And so we tried getting creative, and I think Brian's group probably summarized it the best when they presented it to us, and so that's kind of where we're at now. You know, it's up to this group if you guys all want to move forward with what the subcommittee had come up with in these cuts. If there's any questions, I think the three of us would be happy to try answering. Brian could probably answer them better than the three of us, but go for it. If you have questions, please.
I think the only question I have maybe is for Todd is this reduction in this program on par with the reductions that are having to happen across the department? I guess from a rural roads perspective, obviously, I want to advocate as much that for rural road maintenance, that this program isn't being hit any harder than any other program across the department.
Well, the question I think really kind of gets expanded to the color of money as far as the transportation funding goes. So the operations division, we have the largest portion of the road fund, but other divisions and other groups within the department also have a portion of that. But then there's also MSDIP funding, there's TDT, there's grants, there's money that comes in over the counter, right, for building permits and that sort of thing. So it's all of those are somewhat integrated, but our cut is our portion of the road fund is, you know, there is a revenue shortfall overall. And so when you look at the big picture, portions of our funding are affected by, you know, it's all like interconnected. So I really don't know how to answer the question, Mark, other than I think we're seeing a reduction that's probably, how do I say it? It's more pronounced because our portion is so big, right? Our numbers are so big to begin with. But when we do these budget evaluations, we do look at things holistically. So you know, there are cuts being made in other groups. I don't know what the actual percentages are per se. I don't know off the top of my head what those are, but everyone's seeing a tightening of the belt. We're not the only ones.
Right. And this maintenance program specifically isn't taking a proportional cut that's bigger than urban maintenance programs. I guess that's what I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, so the challenge we have is with the urban program is that you know, ERMD is a unique funding source that helps to basically prop up the road fund. So if it wasn't for ERMD, then there would be even bigger cuts to the rural programs, right? Because then all of that road fund dollar would have to be spread across the urban area as well. So fortunately, ERMD is able to take care of the urban locals and the work that's done in the urban area. But the rural area, and part of the reason too, is that these are generally rural locals that get served these gravel roads. And it, as you all know, right, the rural locals are the lowest on the priority matrix. So now you start to really kind of go deeper into that matrix. So I think that the rural locals are going to see, the rural locals are going to see the biggest impact to the budget impacts. And that's not just on the surface stabilization program, but we're going to see it on the surface treatments. You know, we're going to see it on other things as well. So I think this is maybe just kind of the first thing we're going to see because it happens early in the season. But this discussion, I think, will continue throughout the year as other items come up.
So this is LaBeth. And so what I'm hearing is like our grading of the roads out in the Banks area are going to go from twice a year to once a year.
That's not the plan.
Yeah, but with there is a potential. Well, there is a potential that the gravel roads will see a reduction in service, not necessarily with the number of times the grader is out there. We still have three graders. We haven't reduced the fleet. We have three grader operators, so that's there. But we are looking at, you know, reducing some of the raw material that we use. So, for example, the rock that goes down. So maybe instead of putting three truckloads of rock down on a given road, I'm just as an example, maybe we only put down one, or maybe to one and a half, right? So I do think those types of things are in the future for those. And so we'll have to then work on, and this is where the grader operators and the supervisor will have to really pay attention to what's happening and say, oh yeah, well, we need to, you know, this road can get by with a little bit less, or no, this one needs a little bit more, or this one needs to be status quo. So those, it's gonna make, I think there is gonna be a definite impact. We just don't know to what extent.
And I think as a subcommittee, we were specific to the lignin oil treatment. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah, the subcommittee work is specifically for the surface stabilization. But my point and my comment is just that it's more than that, right? There's other things that are going to kind of do the trickle down. And then also we've seen, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but the roads that do get the surface stabilization treatment tend to have higher performance, right? Because it's like it carries over. It doesn't just stop. Even That's if correct. We go back in and grade it, that material's still there, right? So it still provides some level. Well, now, as we start to wean some of those roads off, that residual material is going to eventually, you know, dissipate. And so then it could be now a compounding effect.
So what the subcommittee had approved to bring to you guys was the reduction specific to the lignin oil. And we took it, I can't remember the miles off the top of my head. Maybe Brian, give them just a little bit more information on what the exact,
it's, you know. Yeah, it's going from 38.19 miles down to right at 15.
Which originally we had discussed when we talked about just doing rural collectors, we were gonna be down at 6 miles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't as bad as we thought when we came back to you guys the last time. It's a whole lot better in that regard.
And a lot better than 2017's program. That's the glass half full side of me.
Are there any other questions or comments regarding what the subcommittee had come up with and what the recommendation was?
Is there any reason to think that the program will swing back the other way going forward, or that it's going to keep getting smaller in future years?
Let me get my crystal ball, Mark. I don't know. I mean, I think that probably at least in the short term, it'll stay at best status quo. I don't see it getting bigger. It could get smaller. And part of that too is the raw material, right? So there has been in recent years, challenges with getting the lignin sulfonate even from the distributors, the suppliers. And so that's another issue that just by the fact that can't get the material, we can't put it on the road. Yeah. And if it gets too late in the season, then it becomes kind of like, we don't want to waste our money, right? And say, finally we get to deliver a material and now we can't do it.
Just trying to set expectations.
Yeah.
Well, lignin oil, I believe, is a byproduct of the paper industry. So the more we get on our iPhones and our iPads and the less newspapers we read probably has a negative effect on that. So to move forward from here, we either have to continue asking questions or make a motion to either approve this or not approve it. And that's kind of where we sit right now, guys.
Make a motion that we go ahead and approve the work of the subcommittee and et al. In order to get.
Thank you, Gary. We have a motion.
I can second it.
Got a motion and a second to send this recommendation forward to the, I'm trying to make sure we get this worded correctly, to the county commission or what we feel. Yeah.
You can keep it simple and just say approve these recommendations for the budget.
I like that better. We'll go with that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right. So let's go ahead and move ahead with Brian. You're going to talk about the inspection of non-maintained roads, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't mind, Lauren. Thank you. This is going to be a quick one. And I'd like to point out that the meeting agenda says inspection of non-maintained roads. More accurately, we have renamed that annual corridor inspections. So I just want to make that observation. And what my report is that I have assigned the inspection of those corridors to a technician, and they will be occurring after he completes two assignments in the coming weeks. So I do not have updated information on those corridors. However, I'd like to share with you the result of last year's inspection of those annual corridors. We discovered some substantial deterioration on Sullivan Road, which extends southwest off of Strassel. There's a very large culvert right as you get onto Sullivan from Strassel, and the bottom of it was essentially completely gone. And we are repairing that, and that is going out to bid in the near future and will be constructed in the coming months. So that's the kind of thing that can result from our annual corridor inspections. And I am looking forward to seeing what the technician's inspection results are coming up in the coming few weeks. But I don't have report information for you on the most recent round because they haven't occurred yet.
And by repairing, what Brian means, we're replacing the culvert. So
right.
It's an engineered project, and we'll contract that out. And it's going through the full project development process. So that's what's happening there. And that we wouldn't have probably found that out if we had not been doing these annual inspections.
Correct.
I have a question. In my discussions with Dan over the last couple of years, he calls me to ask rural road questions every now and then because I'm a little bit more familiar with some areas. I want to know, we did not include, to my knowledge, on the non-maintained road list, is the section of Linklater from where it exists on the west end to where it exists over on the Banks end, on the Sellers Road end, I think it is. And as we look for rural bicycle corridors in the future, there's advantages to the bicycle community of having linkages between the Banks Road system that comes off over that side to get across to the Mountaindale Road system to generalize. In the same way, I'm not sure we included that part of Smoke Ranch Road that comes off of Pumpkin Ridge. I think that's County Road 188, although it's been realigned by Stimson Lumber Company over time. It's not on the original right-of-way in places, but that's very actively used by the bicycle community to get from the Pumpkin Ridge area over to that Dixie Mountain, that area. And so I just want to make sure we at least look at putting those on the list as candidates for future use in that regard.
Just a question about probably for Todd on having a, you guys had a push to legalize right-of-ways, certain county roads in the valley that were paved went from a 40-foot, you know, off of a land claim donation back to county for a road. They went from, well, 40 is not enough, now we want 60. If we've got some rural roads in areas that aren't being maintained, but they're not on right of way, shouldn't we fix that?
Yeah, so there, it's not a secret that we have quite a few county roads that are not specifically in the right of way, or portions of it. And gravel roads actually are common to have this issue because over time that, you know, that road will migrate over time with, you know, just the use and the maintenance of the road. The legalization process is costly and time, and it takes time. We don't just go out and just say, oh, here it is. And so there is a process. We don't do that within our group. That happens through our survey section. And they're doing a whole host of other things as well. It's just one of the things that they do. Legalizations often will become, will get done if there's something else that's going along with it. Like, for example, there's a project. Well, let's make sure we build the project, the road inside the right of way, so we'll legalize the road. Or if there's some other feature that is needed. But there's also, and I'm not a lawyer, but there's also, and what's the word I'm looking for? I'm trying to think, there's a phrase where, like, the as traveled road, right? There's a corridor, 40 foot, 60 foot corridor that's for the right of the people to use, for the public. Well, just because the actual as traveled roadway doesn't necessarily fall within what's on the map, there's still a legal right to be out there. And then the legalization process basically says, okay, here's where the road is now. So we have to kind of pick and choose, like, what's the right time to do that. We just can't go out and just say, oh, yep, we're gonna do all these and clean.
No, I appreciate the explanation. As a rural property owner, we just get a letter in the mail that says surprise. And it's like, whoa, it seems really easy.
Yeah, no.
But knowing that changes the game. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Can I just mark this day on the calendar as the day that Mike Jamieson advocated for cyclists on the rural roads?
It was a little shocking.
Yeah.
I do have a question. This is LaBeth again. So when you go to do Strassel Road, we have buses that runs on that road. And as the manager of the bus company, would be kind of nice to know ahead of time if I have to adjust that route. Usually it's last minute when I get that information, and then I have to try to notify a huge amount of parents.
Yeah, we have a formal process of notification, especially when the closure's going to be happening. First of all, signs will go up. So that's the first indication that, you know, something is brewing. And then we do have, you know, mailers and notices that will be sent out to, you know, the community. So you should be seeing, you will be seeing those things once that happens. Now, and I wasn't aware of where you're at, LaBeth, but I was going to bring this up later. Timber Road is closed right now. I'm not sure if that's affecting your services.
So we have seen that section of Timber Road slowly disintegrate. So we adjusted in September not to use that section of road, and luckily we did.
Good, good. What happened is back in January, this is for the group, back in January, we noticed that the portion of Timber Road kind of in the S-curves was starting to fail. We were getting what we refer to as a just a road settlement. It's not a landslide per se. But then also we've had experience of the uphill side of the hill sloughing off, eroding, a little small debris slide onto the roadway, which we've cleaned up. We've had a couple of those. We've had technicians going out on a regular basis monitoring the settlement of the road and the cracking. And last week there was a substantial movement, vertical displacement, vertical and horizontal displacement. And so the decision was made to close the road. And so right now we've got barricades up and we've got signs, temporary signs up, but we're gonna be doing a full blown closure plan. It's gonna be a while we just figure out what to do. I think today there's a geotech up there, geotech engineer with our project manager doing an initial site assessment. And this is gonna be probably a spendy project to figure out a solution to stabilize that section. The actual area of influence is about 525 feet long, and there are like three slide areas within that 500 foot section of roadway. And unfortunately with Timber Road, it's, and LaBeth can attest to this, or anybody really, is that it's the only north-south connection out there that's between direct on paved road between 6 and 26. Strassel does, you know, peel off diagonally between Timber and 26, but it's gravel and it's a pretty good run of road that people have to get across to. It's used for detours if there's crashes on either of the highways. So it's gonna fit, could affect OSP and ODOT and the sheriff's office if there's an emergency on the highways. So we're working to figure out a good solution, but it's gonna be a challenging one. It's a steep slope on the downhill side. And so we don't know how big of an issue this really is.
I guess we've kind of segued right into that, roundtable discussion. Anybody else have anything else? And Brian, before I cut it off prematurely, I guess you have anything to add about, you know, your discussion specifically on the corridor?
I don't, Lauren, I don't. I'll be able to have more information once those inspections occur.
Perfect. All right, as we're in member roundtable, anybody have anything they want to?
This is Dan. I have a couple things. The first thing, I wanted to know about the MISTIP funding. How is there was a report in the bicycle blogs about how that has been affected this year based on the budget. Is that going to impact the rural roads community?
Well, we don't. I'm not quite sure. There's no direct relationship, Dan, between MISTIP and the rural roads, other than MISTIP does, we do have the rural road, rural bridge program, but that won't be affected by that decision.
Right.
Yeah, so, but we do, you know, most of the work that MISTIP performs are the, you know, urban capital projects. And so that money's focused on there. There is some residual movement of money that will happen. I don't know off the top of my head, I can't remember what the numbers are, but there is some road fund dollars that will, and again, I don't know how all the money is gonna be working because it's not within our group, but some of that money will go towards the major streets program. But we also have the ADA program, right? The curb ramp program that's also in there as well. So there's lots of different things happening all at the same time, and they're all interconnected.
Okay, thanks. I know that Dave McCoy isn't here, but one of the things, you know, he has always been interested in is the seismic updates, and it looks as though the plan now includes hazardous waste and other hazards. Yeah, has that changed the planning for LUT for the way that the new seismic plan is broadened its scope? It includes dams and other things as well.
Yeah. So. I'm not quite understanding your question, Dan, about seismic. What exactly are you asking?
Well, when we looked at it before, It was, you know, how were we going to execute the emergency? And now, and it was just based on the landslide.
Oh.
And now, now the report shows that they're identifying earthen dams and other activities that might, you know, cause flooding as well as, you know, landslides. And so I wondered, has the plan been updated to include that so that we could see, you know, what I ask, what dams they were considering. Was it just Hag Lake, or were there other, you know, smaller reservoirs around that were identified as well?
And what group or what was that report that you were referring to?
It was on the new website about, you know, on the seismic emergency plan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we aren't directly involved with that per se, in the sense that road fund maintenance dollars are going towards that. However, on that topic, I think I've mentioned this group before. We did hire a consultant last year to evaluate our bridge inventory for seismic resiliency. And the consultant is in their final stages of wrapping up that report. And that will be a topic that we present to this group when they get that finished. I've seen the initial draft of the document. I'm not gonna share the number right now just in case it changes, but it's a healthy number that's needed for repair, retrofit, or replacement of county bridges for seismic resiliency. And you know, we'll have to figure out what our approach is for that, because it's—
Right, I understood about, you know, the county's infrastructure, but I found it interesting that now they were including, you know, above ground storage of fuel and, you know, earthen dams and other things that would be affected.
Yeah, no, I'm not aware of that information.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know Hag Lake has been— I think the plan for Hag Lake, the last that I was aware of, is that stabilizing the existing dam is the preferred method, especially with the Willamette Water Supply Project now, supplementing the water supply for the region. But that's the only one that I'm aware of.
Okay. Irrigation district meeting, they did discuss that they do have federal funding now for improvements at that dam specifically. You know, the original discussion was if it breached today, the loss of life at the Stimson Mill would be, you know, dramatic, and there'd be 2 feet of water in Forest Grove. As that dam goes up, they are making seismic improvements while it goes up, and it sounds like it will store more water and be a safer structure on the irrigation side of the world. Anything else? I think we made it a record. The next meeting date is going to be in May, and I believe that is when we're planning our field trip. So Todd and Sherry will probably be sending out some sort of permission slips, and I don't know what we're gonna go look at yet. I think Todd and Sherry were gonna discuss that yet. And what's that? Are there any other additional meeting topics? I don't have it in front of me what the matrix is for that meeting, but if I remember right, it's fairly full. Because of the field trip, it being such a big— is there anything anybody feels that is a need to discuss topic at that next meeting specifically or in the future?
We might touch on vegetation management because it's that time of the year.
Yeah. The idea behind doing that field trip, in my mind, on the ag side of the world, is the fact that that's when we see the most growth. We still have water issues possibly, and it's kind of the start when everything starts to function, you know, So cool. Well, I've covered everything on the list. We just need to get a motion and a second to adjourn.
Well, so make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I've got a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Thanks for putting up with me again. See you next time.